I thought I'll just quickly read the translation for this song. He who brought the treasure of divine love and was filled with compassion and mercy, where has such a personality as Srinivas Acharya gone? Where are my Swarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where are my Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta? And where is Krishnadas Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against a rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all his devotees, in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottam Das simply weeps. Shishi Bhakti Siddhanta Sasi Thakur Maharaj ki. So today's verse is very related to the subject of parampara and Vaishnavacharyas. So we'll start by reading the verse. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, Text 10. And I'll read the verse before this. It doesn't have a purport, so I'll just read. Yonu smarati sandhyayam yushvan anudinam nara tasya bhratrishva atma samyam tatha bhuteshu sauhridam. The Lord continued, those who remember you every evening of every day will become friendly with their brothers and with all other living entities. Text 10. Please repeat. Ye tu mam rudra geetena sayam prata samahita suvantyaham kama vara dasi pragyam chas shobhanam. Ye tu mam rudra geetena sayam prata samahita suvantyaham kamavaran dasye pragyam cha shobhanam. Ye tu mam rudra geetena sayam prata samahita suvantyaham kamavaran dasye pragyam cha shobhanam. Ye tu mam rudra geetena sayam prata samahita van
Satyaha Kamavara Hetumam Rudra Gitena Yetumam Rudra Gitena Sayam Prata Samahita Duvantyaham Kamavaran Dasye Pragyam Chashovana. Ye, those persons, tu, but, mam, unto me, Rudra Gitena, by the song sung by Lord Shiva. Sayam, in the evening. Prata, in the morning. Samahita, being attentive. Suvanti, offer prayers. Aham, I, Kamavaran, all benedictions to fulfill desires. Dasye, shall award pragyam, intelligence, cha, also, shobhana, transcendental. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Those who will offer me the prayers composed by Lord Shiva, both in the morning and in the evening, will be given benedictions by me. In this way, they can both fulfill their desires and attain good intelligence. Please repeat. Those who will offer me the prayers composed by Lord Shiva, both in the morning and in the evening, will be given benedictions by me. In this way, they can both fulfill their desires and attain good intelligence. Purport. Good intelligence means going back home, back to Godhead. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10:10. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. One who offers prayers to the Lord to fulfill his different desires must know that the highest perfection or fulfillment of desire is to go back home, back to Godhead. In this verse, it is indicated that those who remember the activities of the Prachetas, the sons of King Prachinabharishat, will be delivered and blessed. So what to speak of the sons of King Prachinabharishat, who are directly connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead? This is the way of the Parampara system. If we follow the Acharyas, we attain the same benefit as our predecessors. If one follows the decisions of Arjuna, he should be considered to be directly hearing Bhagavad Gita from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no difference between hearing Bhagavad Gita directly from the Supreme Lord and following a personality like Arjuna, who formerly heard Bhagavad Gita directly from the Lord. Sometimes, foolish people argue that since Krishna is not present at the moment, one cannot take direct instructions from him. Such foolish people do not know that there is no difference between directly hearing Bhagavad Gita and reading it, as long as one accepts Bhagavad Gita as it is, spoken by the Lord. However, if one wants to understand Bhagavad Gita by his imperfect interpretations, one cannot possibly understand the mysteries of Bhagavad Gita, even though one may be a great scholar according to mundane estimation. Om Gyanam Timrandhasya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshurur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Tadati Sva Padantikam Vanchakalpatarubhyasya Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So
this is the Lord speaking to the sons of King Prachina Bharishat, the Prachetas, who have finally seen the Lord. So yesterday, we read the first verse that the Lord speaks to the Prachetas, in which he says that I've appeared before you because of your nice relationships amongst yourselves, because of your cooperative spirit. Your cooperative spirit has pleased me, and therefore I have especially appeared before you. And now in these verses, he's describing another reason that makes their spiritual practice very effective. So the first thing was that they were working as a group, and they were meditating on the Lord in the association of other devotees, and they were all brothers, so they were all giving each other association, and were working in complete harmony. And in these verses, Krishna is saying that you were offering me prayers that were composed by Lord Shiva. So your devotional service was done in the disciplic succession. It was done under the guidance of the spiritual master. So these are, like, in some ways, the two things that we see are emphasized by Srila Prabhupada in order to make our spiritual practice successful. One thing he says, to do our devotional service in the association of devotees. And the second thing he says is to do it under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master in the parampara system. So here, the Prachetas are particularly successful because they're in the parampara, and they've been directly instructed by Narada Muni, and they're speaking the prayers that were sung by Lord Shiva. And then Krishna is then giving a further benediction, that he's saying that not only were you successful because you spoke the prayers of Lord Shiva, but also if anyone else says these prayers, so that person repeats what you have done and repeats Lord Shiva's words, they will attain to the same destination as you. So in the previous verse, he was saying that those who remember you will be blessed by this friendly relationships, because this is in some ways the benediction of the Bhagavatam, that by reading the life stories of these characters, of these different acharyas, and different great personalities, simply by reading them, we gain the benediction of imbibing their qualities. So Srila Prabhupada said that if we read the story of Dhruva Maharaj again and again, then we will start to become determined like Dhruva Maharaj, because his quality, his specific quality that made him very advanced and successful was determination. That his name Dhruva means determination. So Lord Chaitanya used to read the stories of Prahlad and Dhruva Maharaj hundreds of times, it's described, in his childhood. He used to read it hundreds of times, because by reading their activities, one gains their own qualities. One gains the qualities of those personalities. So firstly, in the previous verse, he's saying, if they read about you and your service, then because this was the particular quality of the Prachetas, then he said that person will be blessed with friendly relations with their brothers and with all other living entities. So that's always a handy thing to have. And then furthermore, if they repeat the prayers composed by Lord Shiva, then they will attain to the same destination as you. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada confirms this point, that those who follow the acharyas, he says, we attain the same benefit as our predecessors. So in another place, Srila Prabhupada describes that the disciple may not be able to do as much as the spiritual master. So the spiritual master may be preaching all over the world, may have thousands of disciples, and because of that, immense service to the Lord may attain to a very elevated position in the, you know, may become extremely powerful spiritually and advanced. But then Srila Prabhupada says that if the disciple does just what the spiritual master tells him, so the disciple just, let's say, takes care of one temple. The spiritual master opened hundreds of temples, but the disciple takes care of one temple. Then, even though the disciple just took care of one temple, the disciple will attain the same position, same perfection as a spiritual master, because he followed the instruction of the spiritual master perfectly. The disciple, of course, never thinks in that way. But this is the system of the parampara system, that anyone following the acharyas will attain to that same destination. And here we see this point that therefore Prabhupada is emphasizing, that whatever we do in our devotional life needs to be therefore within this parampara system, because otherwise it won't have that effect. In other words, if we do it outside of this empowerment, you could say, that's given by the spiritual masters, then it doesn't produce that same effect, that's the same perfection. It definitely has a positive effect. It's definitely for our benefit, but it doesn't lead us to that same position. So here then he's saying that the Gita and the scriptures need to be understood through the parampara system. The instruction of the Lord needs to be understood through the parampara system, and cannot be understood simply by mundane scholarship or mundane reading. Because, again, the knowledge is revealed, the knowledge is found and received through the parampara system. So Rupa Goswami, Śrīla Rūpa Goswami, has a very nice verse in this regard. He says, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vithimina Aikantiki Hare Bhaktir Utpatayeva Kalpate, where he says that if the devotional service needs to be done according to the directions of the Shrutis, of the scriptures and the Puranas and the Pancharatra system, otherwise, if it's not done in this proper system, then actually that devotional service simply becomes an unnecessary disturbance to society. So not only is it not so beneficial, but if it's not properly guided, and here he's not specifically talking about initiation, he's talking about in general, that any service that we do, if it's under the guidance of the acharyas, then it has fruit. But if it's not, it actually becomes an unnecessary disturbance to society. It's actually a nuisance to society. And this is something that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur greatly emphasized in his preaching. That when he went to Vrindavan, when he went to Navadvip, then he found so many sadhus performing bhajan, performing worship of the Lord, reciting the holy names of the Lord hundreds of times, living in the dham. But because they were sahajyas, they weren't doing it in the order of the spiritual master, and were sort of generating their own process, their own method, and trying to prematurely attain states that that took time to attain, then he found that their devotional service was a disturbance to society. He says it's an unnecessary disturbance, because not only does it not produce much effect, but it also ruins the faith of others. Because when others see that these personalities are devotees of the Lord, but their character is not very good, is not very proper, then people lose faith in sadhus and in the process of devotional service. So this, you could say, difficulty or this problem was first perceived by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, after Lord Chaitanya's departure, 500 years, almost 500 years after Lord Chaitanya's departure, he wanted to revive this pure process of devotional service, to remove all these false processes and establish the pure process. And so he started this in some ways. He wrote many books and he got rid of many imposter sadhus, like a famous one is Falgu Baba, that we see in this Abhayi Charan serial. He got rid of many of these imposter sadhus, but he wasn't able to complete the job. There are still a lot of misinterpretations of Lord Chaitanya's pure philosophy. And these misinterpretations came in two categories. One category was the sahajas, what we're speaking about, the false practitioners, who were, sahaja means someone who is following the process, but he's making it cheap. In other words, that person is not going through the proper method to attain this fruit of love of God. So that was one category, was the sahajas. And the second category were the smartha brahmanas, or the which you could say sort of was the other extreme, were persons who were saying that this method, this process is only for those who are born in a Brahman family. And all other castes are lower than the Brahmanas. The Vaishnavas are also lower than the Brahmanas. And so they were misrepresenting the philosophy in this way, that they were making it into a very ritualistic, birth-based system. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a very great scholar. He was such a great scholar that he was able to handle both of these people. Actually, he was such a great scholar that I think at the age of 8, he had the entire Gita memorized by heart. So the entire Gita was just memorized by heart. And he later on received a great, you could say, place, like a position in a university to study mathematics and astrology. Astronomy or astrology? I think. Astronomy. And so, but he rejected that. He didn't want to become educated. The same point that Srila Prabhupada is saying here, become materially educated, get material education, because this material education he found was not conducive for not necessary for spiritual life. And so but that didn't mean he wasn't a great scholar. He was one of the most powerful scholars at that time, and so therefore he was called the Lion Guru, the Singha Guru. So he had many debates with these smartha brahmanas and with these sahajas and different groups. And in these debates, he would cut them down. He would always defeat them. So much so that sometimes there were riots after these debates. And people would want to take his foot dust. And so there would be riots, and the police or they would have to come and stop these people from protecting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he was a very powerful personality, and he was able to do this for Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was able to clean out Lord Chaitanya's movement so people could see the true essence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, so they could actually appreciate that this is the real philosophy, and this is Lord Chaitanya's movement. So many times, he's in Lord Chaitanya's marketplace, he's compared to a sweeper which is a very exalted position in Lord Chaitanya's marketplace. Because he sweeped out all these unnecessary elements. So we read, worship these acharyas and we read about them. And many times we don't realize just how powerful they were, how much they actually did. It's described that that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's father, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, even though he was a grihastha, he was a family man, and he had 11 children, and he was a judge, he still had 10,000 disciples. He made 10,000 disciples, and he was looking over them. So this was, I mean, the power of who he was. And aside from having 10,000 disciples and 11 children, he also wrote volumes of, like, 30 or 40 volumes of books. So all of this he did, you can imagine, in one lifetime. So it's extraordinary. I mean, each one of his books you read, it's just like, for a normal author, it would take at least 10 years to write some book like this. So we can just understand how powerful Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's father was. That this was Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And he also shows that there's no material, you could say, limitation or material situation that can stop a person from being a pure devotee and being a preacher. He was a householder, he was a family man, but still he was so influential. He had, and these 10,000 disciples, some of them were very prominent people, very influential people. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he prayed for a ray of Vishnu. So not only in terms of his preaching, but also in terms of his family life, he wanted to offer it to the Lord. So he wanted a son who would be a ray of Vishnu. And he specifically prayed that at least one son, please give me, who can continue on this movement and will be a ray of Vishnu. And that was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was a ray of Vishnu, as described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he fulfilled, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur fulfilled what Bhaktivinoda Thakur desired or dreamed to happen. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he established 64 temples all across India, in all different places, which is a very great feat, especially at that time in India. Now it's easy to build buildings. You know, you hire a contractor and they come and they build it. It's easier to travel. It's easy to do all these things. But he established 64 temples in his time. And he did this so he established 64 temples, and he in some ways represented the tradition for the time that he was in. So this again, this is the goes back to the issue of parampara, that what was very special about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is that he, for his time, he did things that only an acharya could do, that were so creative or unique that only an acharya could think in this way. He initiated sannyasis, who at that time was not happening. It's described that the Ramakrishna mission was initiating sannyasis and sending them all over the place. And so, because of this, they were very successful. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he took that you could say model from them, and he applied it to his own tradition. At that time, there were only Babaji's in Gaudiya Vaishnava traditions, and he initiated many sannyasis, and he had them preach all over India. Yes, this is something that which is very unique in some ways, because he saw the need. And one may say that why did he do this? But we find that 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya did the same thing. Lord Chaitanya, he took initiation from a Mayavadi sannyasi, in the Mayavadi parampara system, in order to give credence to his own initiation. So he was also very, for the purpose of preaching, he did this because people respected, at that time, the most respectable tradition were the impersonalists, because they had taken over India quite a lot. So he took sannyas in that tradition so that people would respect his sannyas, and then he distributed it all over the world. So in the same way, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took principles from different places, even though we don't agree with their philosophy, and he engaged that in Krishna service and distributed it all over the world. So this is one thing that he did, is that he initiated sannyasis and preachers and sent them all over. Then he employed many modern facilities. Right? He used cars, he used different amenities that a renunciate at that time would not use, again, to spread Krishna consciousness. He met with many government officials and businessmen, which was also against the norm at that time. And he wore a suit and nice shoes. There's a picture of him like that, sitting with the Prime Minister of the British Minister at that time of India, and sitting on the table with them and discussing his philosophy. So that was very non-orthodox, you could say, very very new. And is described so much so, he was so eager. He was applying this principle of yukta vairagya, or engaging everything so much in Krishna's service, that not only did he do all these things, but he sent the first devotees of Lord Chaitanya across the ocean to England and to Germany, especially to Germany, to preach Krishna consciousness. And this was really unique. This was Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent the first book, the first piece of literature across the sea. He sent it to Montreal, to a library in Montreal, Canada. And that book is still there. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sent the first book, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent the first preachers across the sea. And it's described in the diaries of these disciples who went there before Srila Prabhupada, some of Prabhupada's god brothers who went there, that they met the close associates of Hitler. They went that high up. At that time, you know, Hitler was in power. So I mean, it's slightly before the war, and so they were the top people in society at that time, so they were the people to meet, and so they met. They didn't meet Hitler, but just the person right below him. I forget his name. He's a very famous person. He was Hitler's right hand man, and they met him and had conversations with him. And what's very interesting, and this is described in Pranava Prabhu's study of, and also Bhakti Vikash Maharaj's study of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's life. What's very interesting is that they, even though they were in Germany, and they were speaking to these very, you could say, dangerous people at that time, they and specifically Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur were against their idea of an Aryan civilization. Everyone in India at that time was greatly in favor of it, because Germany and India were in very good relations. So everyone thought, oh, this is really good. We're getting German support. And, you know, they're taking up our ideas of an Aryan, you know, the idea of Aryan life and Aryan civilization. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur specifically spoke against it, which is not a very good political move in terms of spreading a movement. I mean, they had made good friendship with them, all these things. But they said that their Aryan system, and this is actually documented, it's in letters of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said, their Aryan system is based on birth. It's based on a person's caste, a race and a person's birth. And therefore, it's actually going opposite to the entire our idea of an Aryan life and who is an Aryan. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the Aryan is something based on, it's a spiritual qualification. A real Aryan is a spiritually advanced person. So it's not based on birth. It has to be based on the level of this, of qualification and of the soul. And so this idea of Aryan actually goes completely against spiritual life. He was saying that this is opposite to the Vedic teaching. It's a complete misinterpretation. And he had this at that time. There was, you know, the national movement going on of Gandhi in India. There was the Germans in Europe. So it's a very political environment. And he specifically had this line which became very famous that he said nation is imagination. He said, "There's nothing like nation. All this Aryan idea, this independence, all of these things are all based on birth. So we reject them. All of this is simply imagination." And given the political situation at that time, you can see how that was very unpopular in the sense that everyone else was completely in the opposite mood. And Srila Prabhupada describes that even he was surprised about this. He was also in the mood of Gandhi's independence, and was, and this is the first thing actually that Srila Prabhupada encountered when he met Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was that don't be involved in this whole Gandhian or independence movement. This is all Lord Chaitanya's movement. Cannot wait for it. So we see both sides of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's personality. That on one hand, he was able to engage everything in Krishna's service and be very unique and dynamic in that way. But on the other hand, he wasn't afraid to be unpopular. On the other hand, he didn't change the philosophy a bit to satisfy other people. So it was an amazing combination. I mean, someone who's using cars and all these things, you would think he would be, you know, very politically correct at that time. But he wasn't afraid to be the opposite like that. So this was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mood. Actually, it's described that when the workers would make the temple, the Gaudiya Math temple, then sometimes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so eager to see it done that he would roll their cigarettes, their beady cigarettes, so that they would keep on working and the work would not slow down. Because these workers, they would need to stop from time to time to make their cigarettes. You know, they have the in India, even to this day in the villages, people make their own it's homemade cigarettes. And so they would have to stop and do this, but he was so just like, okay, this is too slow, so I'll make the cigarettes for you and you keep on working. So I mean, very amazing in that way. And one thing that he emphasized was that, specifically of this mood of preaching and satisfying the spiritual master, that the spiritual life is very down to earth and very practical, and bhajan is for later, in terms of the sadhus and all these things that he met, in terms of his own example, and to those who he was preaching to, he engaged them in building temples and spreading the movement, and he emphasized this point very greatly. So, it's getting very late. I'll just read a few things that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said. Some very amazing things that he said right before his departure from the world. This is, I think, just a few months before he departed from the world. And these were some instructions that he gave to to his disciples. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur elaborated on these themes in Dhaka in 1935. He said, "Look within, amend yourself, rather than pry into the frailties of others." The next quote, "In this world of Maya, averse to the Lord, full of trials and tribulations, only patience, humility, and respect for others are our friends for Hari Bhajan." Lord Gaurasundara puts his devotees in various difficulties and associations to test their patience and strength of mind. Success depends on their good fortune. This is a nice one, isn't it? Lord Gaurasundara puts his devotees in various difficulties and associations to test their patience and strength of mind. Success depends on their good fortune. When faults in others misguide and delude you, have patience, introspect, and find faults in yourself. Know that others cannot harm you unless you harm yourself. This is a very nice thing he said. Know that others cannot harm you unless you harm yourself. Then he said, this is the next one is a very famous one that Srila Prabhupada quoted many times to his own disciples. He said, "I wish that every selfless, tender-hearted person of the Gaudiya Math will be prepared to shed 200 gallons of blood for the nourishment of the spiritual corpus of every individual of this world." So I'll read it again. "I wish that every selfless, tender-hearted person of the Gaudiya Math will be prepared to shed 200 gallons of blood for the nourishment of the spiritual corpus of every individual of this world." Okay, so I will stop here. And Prabhu, would you have some comments?
ज्ञानति मनन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुर्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. So today is the disappearance day of Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. And Bhakti Vikas Maharaj, he wrote this amazing book, so I thought we should say something from this book, because Maharaj made such an effort. I was just reading the foreword, and I wanted to share that because I thought it was quite impressive. It starts with a quote from the Chaitanya Charitamrita: "I'm foolish, low-born, and insignificant, and I'm always desire material enjoyment. Yet by the order of the Vaishnavas, I'm bold enough to write this book." And he's saying that it is practically a joke that such a minuscule insect as myself would dare to write about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. I'm far inferior to a piece of dust that has only once touched his divine lotus feet. After more than 30 years of making a show of devotional service, I remain plodding in a rut of loathsome material desires. Finding myself in such an abominable condition, I have concluded that my only hope for elevation is the mercy of the Acharyas, especially that of my initiating spiritual master and savior, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and the representative of all previous Acharyas, without whose unprecedented and inimitable endeavor, the vast majority of readers of this book could never have heard of Om Vishnupad, Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Prabhupada. It is through His Divine Grace that not only someone as nondescript as I, but almost everyone else in the universe can be connected to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and through him to the Parampara, and on up to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna." So I thought it was very nice. I can maybe read something from the last. It's a huge book from the last pastimes of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. This is chapter 6, winding up his pastimes. I don't know even what these two books are, but Maharaj really did an amazing job. I hope somebody from our temple can read these books if they find the time and give us a summary someday. I don't think I have the time to read it, but we'll read something now. Chapter 6, winding up his pastimes, hints of departure. For several years, prevenient to his passing away, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati often spoke of its inevitability by referring to the residual portion of my life, or this last stage of my life, or by stating, I don't have much time left, or I do not know how much longer Krishna will keep me here. In 1927, he wrote, just as Maharaj Parikshit listened to Bhagavatam in his last days, I too desire the association of devotees in my final days. Where there is no Harikatha, it doesn't matter how many friends and relatives are there or how comfortable the situation is, in my concluding sojourn, such places and associations strike me as extremely unnecessary and undesirable. Around 1930, at the annual festival of the Ramananda Gaudiya Math in Kovur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta told the devotees, taking Mahaprasadam there, the sun is about to set. You won't get delicious Mahaprasad like this in the future. Such a function will no longer be held. In a lecture of 1932, Srila Saraswati Thakur noted that from the beginning of his endeavors, even before founding the Gaudiya Math, he had been beset by immeasurable obstacles. In transcendental grief, he lamented that he was deprived of service to Sri Sri Radha Vrajamohan and Sri Gaudiya Math. Quoting Sri Advaita Acharya's elliptic instruction to Mahaprabhu to wind up his pastimes, this is from CC 3.19.20, he then stated that now the time had come to sing the song of the Avanti Brahmana. Namame Bhagavam Stusta Sarva Deva Mayoharihi Yena Nito Dasham Etam Nirvidas Chatmana Plava. Bhagavan Hari, who contains within himself all the demigods, must be satisfied with me. It is he who has brought me to this suffering condition and forced me to experience detachments, which is the boat to carry me over this ocean of material life. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.23.28. From early 1935, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati regularly hinted at his imminent passing. While lecturing in Dhaka, he declared, our span of life is short. Our life will be crowned with success if the body wears out while constantly speaking Harikatha. He himself displayed the paragon of such advice during the annual festival of Sri Gaudiya Math in 1935 by delivering a 16-day series of extraordinary lectures on Srimad Bhagavatam, analyzing in details its conceptions, theology, and teachings. So I'll just speak a little bit because I just remembered what Rasa Mandala was just telling me before I came here to the temple. I just met him at around 7:30, and he said that one of the things, because I asked him, did you prepare anything? And he really did not have prepared so much. But he had one kind of thought that came into his mind, because he reminded me that he said the purport, it's very much conducive for this lecture, which we have already experienced by Gaurari. It was a very nice lecture. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as well as Bhaktisiddhanta Goswami Maharaj, as well as Srila Prabhupada, he said, of course, the principle is there to follow the orders of the spiritual master, but they were, all three of them, they were very original, they were very enthusiastic, they were very creative, I think that was the word he used, in pushing on this mission. We just had some examples from Gaurahari, like for instance with the rolling of the cigarettes. And actually, because it's quite innovative, and our movement has gone through so many changes. What it reminded me of was Jayananda Prabhu, who was also there's one story that he was buying coffee when they were driving like a really long drive, and you know. there were the two of them, and it was like a really, in America you have these highways and they just go on and on and on. And another thing that he would do, he would buy beer for this, I think it was like a Mexican, and he was building the rat car, but he needed his six pack of beers at the end of the day. So he actually went to the temple president, he asked, can you give me some money? And the president in those days, people were very stunned, so, well, what is it about, Prabhu? And he didn't want to say, and then the president pressed him, and he said, well, it's for beer, for, you know, I got this helper. So the president actually, he allowed him to do that. And it just goes to show that these principles from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, from Bhaktisiddhanta, from Srila Prabhupada, that we should some other carry that through. And of course, Prabhupada, many times it was very obvious that Prabhupada was so pleased with Jayananda, and he's been coined a modern day saint. So because sometimes persons like Bhaktisiddhanta Goswami Maharaj, it not only in time, it's like 1936, is very far away, but also in like realizations. We hear from different sources that he is like one of the Manjaris, and we tend to think like, well, we cannot reach that. But, you know, if we look at somebody like Jayananda, then it might be a little bit closer to our hearts, closer to our minds. And from those examples, when Gaurav was saying that, I can see that he has that same mood. Oh, I'm sorry, what did I say? Gaurav. Gopal Hari, excuse me, bro. So with Jayananda we can see that he, as far as I could see, that he imbibed that kind of mood of Srila Saraswati Thakur to just push on the mission and to engage everything in Krishna's service. At the same time, he was very pure. Of course, there's another story that he was sleeping during class and that the devotees wanted to wake him up, because with Prabhupada it was always a whole thing, you know, that you shouldn't sleep during class. Prabhupada said, no, it's all right. And one time he also embarrassed him. He said, Jayananda just looks like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is actually on tape. And you can just feel Jayananda's embarrassment, you know. But Prabhupada like that, because generally Prabhupada didn't glorify his disciples so much, you know, especially in public. But Jayananda he did. So it just is an example, gives an example that Jayananda was very dear to Srila Prabhupada. Like on a day like today, we want to follow in the footsteps of the acharyas, and with Bhaktisiddhanta it might be a little bit daunting, and therefore, you know, it Jayananda came to my mind, and therefore I just wanted to share that. And that on the one hand we should be very strict in our sadhana, on the other hand we should be innovative in preaching this mission. So I'll read a little bit more. Now it gets a little bit heavy, it seems. Feeling increasingly disgusted with several of his disciples, Srila Saraswati Thakur would comment on their proclivity for eating and sleeping and their having no inspiration for broadcasting the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's kind of confirmed what I just said. That should not be our mood. He lamented that despite having so many disciples, most of them were Kanishtha Adhikaris, fit for Archana but not for preaching. On seeing that the number of his new five disciples was swelling, he decided to depart. There's a note here. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada wrote, "In the latter days of my Guru Maharaj, he was very disgusted. Actually, he left this world earlier. Otherwise, he would have continued to live for more years." This is from a letter in 1974. Nevertheless, such statements may be compared with many positive utterances that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati made about his disciples, as found throughout his book. The disgust of a guru toward his disciples should be understood as a manifestation of his transcendental concern for them, not necessarily as outright rejection. So that's a very nice footnote of Bhaktivikas Maharaj. It's very nice. So we should try and understand that. Because I think if you read this, what Maharaj is saying, and I'm sure he must have had realizations after compiling this book, that we should take it to heart. I think this might have been a little bit misunderstood. We should always be very, very meek and humble. I remember one I think, I forgot his name, but one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, he was on the memory tapes, and he was saying that, Maharaj was saying that I have four disciples, two hands and two legs. They do what I say. You know, my hand, it's very difficult to find disciples that do exactly what the guru says. And I forgot who spoke about it. I forgot, it is, there's only one godbrother, he's on the memory tapes. I don't want to get his name wrong. I think, well, I can speculate, I think it was Puri Maharaj, but you can look it up. He was Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was saying that. Yeah. So, I'll just read a little bit more. In the last few years of his manifest presence, he often quoted verses that stress the uselessness of temporal attachments. I just omit the Sanskrit. I can read it quickly anyway. Tasmat idam jagat asesham asat svarupam svapna bham asta dishanam puru dukha dukham tvayeva nitya shuka bhoda tanyanante mayate ujat api yat sat ivhava bhati. Therefore, this entire universe, which like a dream is by nature unreal, yet appears real and thus covers one's consciousness and assails him with repeated miseries. This universe appears real because it is manifested by the potency of illusion emanating from you, whose unlimited transcendental forms are full of eternal happiness and knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.40.22. Karmanam parinam mitvat avirinchat amangalam vipaschin nashvaram pashet adrishtam apidrishtavat. Material activity is subject to constant transformation, and thus from the planet of Lord Brahma on down, there is simply inauspiciousness. A wise man can understand that just as everything he observed is subject to destruction, so also are all things that he cannot directly see. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.19.18. During this period, he frequently recited Madhavaham Parinama Nirisha. Oh Madhava, as a consequence of the distress experienced in trying to enjoy material life, we are forlorn. Madhavaham Parinam Nirasha. He several times narrated the epilogue of the wise old monkey to demonstrate that persons who faithfully abide by the instructions of a genuine guru and thereby engage unflinchingly in Hari Bhakti will certainly attain ultimate welfare. But those who follow evil companions, considering that the aging advisor might be deluded and not know more than anyone else, will undoubtedly reap a disastrous result. I'll just read it again. The English is sometimes a little bit profound by Maharaj. So he's saying that we can also maybe read that. Because anybody knows this story about the wise old monkey? I don't think so. Anyway, I'll read it again. He several times narrated the epilogue of the wise old monkey to demonstrate that persons who faithfully abide by the instructions of a genuine guru and thereby engage in unflinchingly in Hari Bhakti will certainly attain ultimate welfare. So that's very clear. Those who follow evil companions, considering that the aging advisor might be deluded and not know more than anyone else. So in other words, the evil companion, he is deluded and he doesn't know more than anyone else, will undoubtedly reap a disastrous result. So again, yes? I don't know. It's here because I thought it was in the other book. That's quite long. Shall I read it and then end? It's a nice story. It's 2 pages. Yeah? Okay. The Wise Old Monkey, a fable narrated by Srila Saraswati Thakur and included in Upakhyana Upadesh. There once lived a king who had many sons. For their entertainment, he had ordered an entire family of monkeys to be caught and domesticated. Those monkeys lived in a palace, and the princess would play with them and feed them tasty tidbits. The leader of these simians was a wise elderly monkey who was studied in the scriptures of Chanakya Pandit and other sages, which he taught to his kinsmen. Besides these monkeys, a flock of sheep was kept to pull a cart for the prince's amusement. Among these sheep, one especially ravenous ram always sought opportunities to sneak into the kitchen and guzzle whatever he could. Upon noticing the ram in their territory, the cooks would immediately strike him with the fierce object they could grab. This was daily occurrence and sometimes happened a few times a day. One time, after seeing the cooks beat the ram, the monkey leader became pensive. He deliberated. Wherever cooks fight with the ram is a dangerous place for monkeys, for one day the following could happen. After the ram enters the kitchen, the cooks will find nothing to strike him with except a log from the oven. The ram's hair will catch fire, so he will scoot into the stable just opposite the kitchen and roll on the straw-covered floor to try to extinguish the fire. The straw will ignite and quickly incinerate the stable. Some horses will die. The rest will be severely burned. The king will call in his physicians, who will tell him that according to the great veterinary Salihotra, the best cure for horses' burns is monkey fat. This will be the ruin of my family, for the king will have us slaughtered for our fat. I think we should run for our lives without delaying a minute. The wise monkey then called his relatives, apprised them of the precarious situation, and advised their return to the wilds, noting, we may have to refer to a simple and austere life, but at least we will be safe. Unfortunately, his advice was scoffed at. Senile fears, because of this old ape's anile prejudice, must we now leave the palace where princes feed us fried, boiled, and steamed food and sweets, and we live in blissful peace to again munch leaves and sleep on branches? No way. However much their sapient leader tried to explain that Spartan living is better than certain death, the other monkeys only protested and jeered him. Despairing and unwilling to witness the extermination of his dynasty, he resolved to leave alone for the forest. Thereafter, the rest of the monkeys continued living in the palace, enjoying the prince's affection and royal luxuries. One day, everything came to pass as the elder monkey had predicted. The greedy ram sneaked into the kitchen and was bringing on everything inside. Was binging on everything inside. When the cooks spotted him and, enraged, looked for something heavy to smite him with. Finding only a half-burned brand from the oven, one cook grabbed it and beat the ram, whose long hairs then blazed up, causing him to bolt from the kitchen into the stable and roll in the straw, and thereupon the entire stable was soon consumed by a whirling, tempestuous fire. Half of the king's favorite steeds died in the conflagration, while the others managed to break their fetters and survive, suffering acute burns in the ordeal. The king called for his veterinarians and asked how his horses could be healed. They respectfully submitted, Maharaj, Maharishi Salihotra has written that the best treatment for horses' burns is monkey fat. It relieved the animal's pain just as the rising sun rids darkness. Wonderful, the king exclaimed. We have an entire family of monkeys in the palace. Take them and do the needful to cure my horses. The king's servants then took nets, swords, and spears and encircled the monkeys, not one of which escaped. When shortly thereafter the wise leader of the monkeys received news of his family's annihilation, he was plunged into grief. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati explained the moral of this story thus. Disciples who sincerely follow the instructions of their guru and shun bad association will be benefited. But those who consider that he has become senile and has nothing further to teach them, or that they now know much, or that they now know as much as or more than he, such disciples will surely become casualties of Asat Sangha and be ruined. Observing this tendency in some of his sishas and unable to bear witnessing their destruction, the Acharya departs from this world. What can I say more? Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai.